Hey, this is Michael Bradley from Bradley Insurance Group. One thing that I know really well is how to help businesses protect themselves. And if you want to discover ways to transform your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, significantly increase your revenue, and create scalable sales systems for your teams, you should be listening to the Authentic Persuasion Show with my good friend, Jason Cutter.
Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader. On the Authentic Persuasion Show with me today is Michael Bradley. He is a commercial insurance broker helping small businesses get something they need and hope that they never use, which we're going to chat about why that's such a challenge to help people with. He's part of the Bradley Insurance Group, a family-owned and run business. I'm excited to have his thoughts both from a sales professional standpoint and then also manager and then also what he's seeing with clients. Michael, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Thanks for having me.
So, like I said, you are part of a family-run business, and you have been there for quite some time, not just entering into the family business at this point. When did you start with the company?
July of 2016.
Yeah.
So, just over 4 years now.
Okay. And something your dad started, what, 1986, I think is what you told me?
1986, long time ago. I think I was 11 years old, so...
So most people are familiar with insurance. So I'm not going to get into the insurance and what you do commercial wise. Where I really wanted to chat about, which I thought was fascinating when we talked, is that you're selling something that people don't necessarily want and also hopefully never use. So talk to me about that kind of perspective, where that shows up as a challenge in the sales enrollment process.
It's interesting, right? So at the end of the day, nobody likes the insurance guy. It's the bill that everybody hates, whether it's for your personal home and auto or possibly for your business needs. And it can be an expensive line on the item sheet, right? But it's good for me in the fact that it's something that everybody needs. And from a sales perspective, you never want to sell based on price. Every sales expert will tell you if you're selling on price, you're going to lose, blah, blah, blah. And I agree with that 100%. But at the end of the day, what I'm selling does come down to price. A lot of times I go into situations where I can improve coverages and show gaps and absolutely show value in what we're doing. But at the end of the day, most people are concerned about price. So it's kind of a catch-22. You don't want to sell on price, but it's all about price. So it's definitely an interesting place to be.
Well, and that does get into that discussion and that debate, right, where it comes down to price. Once it's about price, then it becomes a commodity. And then value is very subjective and can be hard to get somebody to realize. If they're focused on price, then what's the value? Then all of a sudden, the value is the price and it's nothing beyond that. And right. It's one of those things where if you have any experience with something like insurance, you can always find a cheaper insurance, but you may not always want that cheaper insurance, right? It could be dangerous, if you will.
Nobody knows that they need me until they need me. That's really the end of the day, you know, and I joke with clients all the time. Nobody likes to see me. I'm just the insurance guy, and I'm going to tell you, here's what your rates are this year. But I am your best friend if and when you have a claim and if and when you have a problem, and we can help negotiate that and make sure that you get made whole in case of a catastrophe. So then we become your best friend. So, and anybody that's had an insurance claim understands that. Most of the people that I see, if you call somebody and say, hey, this is who we are, this is what we do, can we come quote your insurance? If they don't have a problem, they're not really too interested in seeing us. But if they have a problem, whether it be price-wise, service-wise, coverage-wise, then they're happy to see you. And that part's nice. So if I'm in front of somebody, there's a reason why I'm there. It's not because they just want to spend an hour of their day getting to know Michael Bradley. That's not it. There's usually a problem. And first part of my process is trying to identify what the problem is and why I'm actually sitting in that appointment.
And the other part with this then creates the challenge is that it's something literally everyone hopes they don't use, right? Because if they have to use it, then that means something bad happened. They like to have the insurance, right? The assurance that they're covered and can be made whole, but nobody wants to use it. And I know that becomes challenging for you at renewal time where it's like, hey, premiums are going up or we need to reassess what you have going on. I know for myself and my own, even just personal insurance, it's like, wait, why do I even need this? Like, I'm not using it. And so where does that show up in those periods?
Well, it's different personal to commercial, right? So in your personal insurance, you have a lot of control on what you use, right? How well you maintain and take care of your house, how you decide you're going to drive your car on I-70 or on I-25. You still don't have control over how the people next to you are driving. You don't have control over how the guy next to you, whether or not the guy next to you has insurance or not. When you get to the commercial side of things, you have less control because now you have employees driving your vehicles. You have employees providing services sometimes in people's houses. So you have less and less control. So on the commercial side, it's even more important to make sure that you're covered no matter what happens for things that you can't control. None of us can control on the personal or commercial side. We certainly can't control hail. We certainly can't control fire, which is a big thing going on right now in Colorado. Those things are catastrophic. But you also can't control your employee and whether he's texting while he's driving. You can't control whether your employee and how he's treating other employees, whether he decides to not pay attention when he's going up the ladder and he slips and falls. There's a lot more things that you can't control commercially, and those are the things that people have to be aware of. Most people are, but there's a good amount of people who just look at it as, hey, I'm never going to use this. I have to have it because they tell me I have to have it by law or the bank makes me have it.
Yeah. And it's interesting too about that, the premise and the umbrella that you fall under, which is people don't want to have to use it. They don't want something that they need to use. And then obviously you have the renewal and it's hard to sell this service that nobody actually wants. Let's say most people don't want or don't want to have to think about. And what's fascinating to me is the connection to another guest I had on the show is you are working with Benita Samuels, who was just on the show for the podcast, and she's great on the marketing side. And she was a connection through Jamie Sarchet, who works at Fieldman Mortuary, who helps people with end of life plans, which is another thing people don't ever want to think about, don't want to have to plan for. And even though it seems like an easy sale, that one is definitely not. And it's interesting how both of you are connected and both selling something that people hope they never have to use.
Well, necessarily sell into life plans, but we do sell a lot of life insurance, a lot of long-term care insurance, and that's something that everybody dreads talking about, right? And it's kind of a morbid conversation. You go to talk to somebody about life insurance. I had a client just tell me just the other day, well, this isn't life insurance. It does nothing for me while I'm alive. This is death insurance, and it's going to take care of all these other people, but it's not going to take care of me. And when I laugh, and he's right, but you know, there's a need for it. But it's also just one of those things that nobody ever wants to talk to. I'm 45 years old and never thought, you grow up and you're younger and you're invincible, right? And nothing's ever going to happen. You're never going to break your leg. You're never going to fall off a ladder. As we get older, we start to think about things and you think about things a little bit differently, but it's still something that you don't want to start talking about your own mortality in any way.
So let's transition and talk about your sales style. So how do you approach those conversations? What have you found successful that works when having, whether it's the long-term care insurance, life insurance, a business insurance, what's your sales style like?
With everything I do, no matter what it is I'm selling, I like to consider myself a very laid-back salesman. I have a very laid-back conversational approach. At the end of the day, in the insurance world, an attorney friend of mine told me this, insurance agents are just like attorneys. There's 10,000 of us in the state of Colorado. Of the 10,000, maybe 10% are good at what they do. And of the 10%, maybe 50% are honest. We really focus on making sure we check all those boxes. I'm the first one to tell somebody, and I tell a handful of clients every year, hey, you're right where you need to be. I can't beat that. The coverage is right. The price is great. And you're where you need to be. That doesn't happen very often, but it happens. And if it does, I'm happy to tell you that. But I don't want to ever sell anybody something they don't need. My job is to say, here's exactly what you have, and here's what it costs. Here's what I propose, and here's what it costs. And if there's differences, it's highlighted, it's bolded out. And at the end of the day, I need to sell myself, and I need to sell Bradley Insurance Group. People have to trust who they're doing business with, and they're entrusting their business with me. And so I have to do a good job of making sure that they're comfortable with me and know that they're getting a good product for the right price.
And I love the part where you started, which is it's either a good fit or it's not, right? For people listening, I think that's one of the deciding factors where somebody is selling like a professional with the goal of the other person in mind is exactly what you said, which is if you can help them, great. If you can't help them, equally great. You'll let them know and not try to force it. I mean, that's what gives a lot of salespeople and probably those other insurance people you're talking about in the other buckets a bad name is the ones where it's like they're trying to talk people into something that might be the same or even worse of a package with their own incentive in mind.
There's no doubt about it, right? There was one client I remember specifically. He just told me up front, I hate the insurance guy. I hate it. I hate what you do. I'm sure you're a nice guy, but I just don't like it. I immediately showed up to our second appointment wearing my green plaid sport coat, trying to look like a traditional sales guy that, you know, is just there, like Ned Meyerson, the guy from Groundhog's Day. I tried to look as just, and I said, I wore this just for you. And, you know, I got him to laugh a little bit at least. But at the end of the day, you have to be a good fit on both sides. Not everybody's a good fit for us, and we're not a good fit for everybody, but we try to be. People have relationships. It's all about relationship selling. It really is, because if I'm a good insurance agent and I walk into ABC Contractor and show them a proposal, another good insurance agent can walk in there and show them the exact same proposal with the right coverages and the right numbers. Then it needs to come down to what our relationship is, what my service is going to be after the sale. Can they get a hold of me? If that's the important part, as long as you're doing everything correct, everything else will take care of itself.
And that's so important for people listening, because sometimes what you're selling for people out there is a commodity. At the end of the day, there is comparable products out there or services that do exactly what you do. Now, there's very unique things, but a lot of times there's something comparable enough. And then it comes down to that relationship, which leads me into, what do you think it means to be authentic?
That's a terribly hard question. I don't know what authentic is. I think it's different for everybody. I just go in and I can just be me. My grandfather had small business. My father had small business. I've worked for small business all my life, whether it's family or not. But my grandfather told my dad, if your word's no good, you're no good. And my dad told me the same thing. That's authentic to me. I've made mistakes. We've made mistakes at Bradley Insurance Group, but I've never lied to anybody. And that's the definition of authentic I can come up with.
I love it. That is perfect, especially because it is your definition. And I like how you put that in it. It rings true with what I think is important for people, one aspect of it. Where do you see persuasion fitting into your success?
I don't. Maybe there is some there that I'm not aware of. Maybe I simplify things too much. At the end of the day, like I said, our proposals and the way we sell things, it's very black and white. You know exactly what it is you're paying for. I've gone in before and somebody's paying $25,000 a year for insurance, and I go in and sell them something for $35,000 a year. It's not the same. I've improved coverages, but I'm going to explain to them why. And at the end of the day, they can say, yep, I want this, but check that box, I don't want that, and check that box, I don't want that. It's up to them. My job is to present to them so they understand what they're buying, right? Most people don't understand insurance. Most people don't know what the definition of general liability is and what it really covers. So that's my job, is to explain to them so they know it the best they can. And more often than not, you can explain it to them, they'll buy it, then you go back next year for renewal and you go back out and you're going to explain it again, because at the end of the day, I'm the insurance guy. So they want to go be plumbers, go be electricians, and I'll call them when I need a plumber and electrician, because I don't want to do that stuff. They're calling me to trust me to handle the insurance stuff, and that's kind of the persuasion part of it, I guess.
And I would say that when you really unpack your process, just hearing you talk about it and knowing you and chatting with you before, is you are using persuasion, but not in the way you might think persuasion is, which is either manipulating or talking someone into it or twisting arms, but more of like your whole process is built to persuade somebody to take the right action for them. And you're doing it in such a way where it's relational, and then it's the products, and it's giving them the choices, and then helping them make the right one and take some action. I guarantee there's persuasion in a positive way happening everywhere in your process, in a good way.
And I see that. And you say persuasion and I say education. It's probably the same, right?
Yep. I love it. And I know other salespeople who look at it the same way, right? They're educating as a part of their sales process. And they feel like as a professional, that's their job, is to educate and then help them move forward, especially with something like insurance where people don't know. Like you said, the next year you could talk to them. They still don't know. They don't remember. Doesn't matter. What is one of the best traits, the most important traits, personality, mindset that you see of top salespeople out there, either on your team or in all your experiences?
At the end of the day, honesty is the number one thing. And I think that everybody can tell if somebody's honest or not. I think that's the number one thing. And then, or maybe authenticity, like you said earlier, that's the big thing. I had a compliment from a client that said that I came in and I was one of the few salespeople that came in that felt like I wasn't trying to sell them something. That's really good, right? Everybody has the stereotype of the used car sales guy or the insurance guy in the plaid coat. I try not to be those things. At the end of the day, this is a business. It's a relationship. I'm looking at you as a client. You're looking at me as a service provider. And it's a trust building process, is what I think.
And I agree. I think that's a great point. I mean, it is fascinating how there's this stereotypical salesperson when anybody says used car salesman, which is interesting because I've been saying this a lot on the podcast. That's not fair because there's a lot of people in used car sales that are good. There's a lot of people in insurance
that are great guys.
Exactly, right? But what's interesting is that most people don't even have a bad experience with a used car salesperson, but it's something that's like handed down from generation to generation as like this stereotype, what you see in TV or movies. And I think one of the keys to your point about being honest and authentic, one thing I tell people is when in doubt, just do the opposite of what you think other salespeople are doing. Right? Just do the opposite. Be you, do the opposite and come from a different place versus, like you said, you've got people you walk in, they're like, you don't act like everyone else who walks in here.
Best answers that you can give somebody, that's the most honest answer you can give somebody in any kind of sales presentation is if they ask you a question and you don't know the answer, saying, I don't know is an acceptable answer. Because you don't know everything. I'm pretty good in insurance. I don't know everything. I take education classes. I try to be up to date, but there's somebody could ask me a question and I don't know. But if you tell them, honestly, you don't know, and I'll get back to you and I'm going to find out the correct answer, that's a hell of a lot better than going to say something that is half true or just sounds like you made it up off the top of your head. I don't know is just an okay answer. And so many salespeople are scared to say that. And I don't know why.
Not why they're scared to say that, but why do you think that works so well, saying, I don't know when you don't know? Why does that work so well with the prospective client you're dealing with?
That goes right back into being the honest thing. If just telling somebody I don't know the answer, and I've done sales for a long time before I even sold insurance, and I've had to say I don't know a few times, more than a few. But if they really truly believe that you're going to go and find out the correct answer, they're okay with I don't know. Much more so than they're okay with make something up off the top of your head and just to sound good, because I don't have to know everything. I just have to be able to get the correct answer to the client when they need it. And you can get that done.
And I think one of the subtle things that I've noticed that happens is everyone's afraid of dealing with salespeople at some level. Some of them have really high walls and barriers, and they're super worried because of what's happened to them in the past. Like your person who told you they hate insurance salespeople. There's something that happened, right? They touched the stove. It hurt. They're not going to do it again. They don't trust salespeople. Some people are more understanding, but there's always a little guard that's up. When you're perfect and slick and it sounds like you have all the answers, and then maybe they're true or not, a lot of times that just keeps people's walls up. When you say, I don't know, then what happens? They go, okay, this person is real. Like, they don't know everything. They're not trying to pretend they know everything. They're not just trying to sell me something or get one over on me. Like, those kind of things bring those barriers down. As long as you're a professional and you know what you're talking about, you can go get the answer. That actually goes a long way to making it more real for the other person.
Without doubt.
So one of the things that you do is you are obviously selling to and helping companies and businesses. Let's talk specifically on the sales side. What are you seeing companies doing right now, your clients or just people you know, out in the world, like what are they doing effective from a sales standpoint or a marketing standpoint? What are you seeing that's working out there right now? Because you have this broad scope of lots of different industries, right?
It's interesting. I mean, in my world, you don't see a lot of advertising for commercial insurance. You don't see a lot of billboards. You don't see Facebook ads or insurance or LinkedIn ads. You just don't see it. I don't know if it's taboo like it used to be forever ago. Attorneys never advertised, but now you see the Frank Azars of the world on TV all the time. It's really word of mouth really works for us. Referral business really works for us. The old-fashioned pick up the phone and cold call people, that works. Insurance is a law of averages, both on the insurance actuarial side and however many phone calls I make in a month is how many appointments I make, which is how many sales I'll make. That still works. But we're branching out. We're starting to do some stuff on social media. We're doing some stuff on LinkedIn. We're doing some stuff on Facebook. Not so much advertising or, hey, come do business with me, but just putting it out there. This is who we are. This is what we do. It's changing so fast because as the generation ahead of me is selling their businesses to the generation below me, the younger generation, they want to do everything online. They want to do everything on LinkedIn and Zoom and things like that. So it's changing. I don't know that I'm a very good guy to ask that question on what works and what doesn't.
What are you seeing though? Like you're obviously seeing your clients, you have relationships with them, you're talking to them. What are they doing well these days for their business, for their growth, for sales? Anything you're seeing in common?
I think everybody is really taking advantage of the internet. On my client side, you see more and more Google ads for plumbers. You see that for HVAC people and the artisan contractor side of things. Restaurants are getting more and more out there. You're seeing more and more things on social media from restaurants and showing. I mean, I see on my Facebook feed, it says, here's what the lunch special is with the picture of whatever the sandwich of the day is with the side, things like that. I think that's working for people. I'd love for somebody to tell me what's really working in the insurance world. We talk to other insurance agents and say, hey, what are you doing? And they're like, well, we're doing this. It doesn't work, but you know, we're doing it. But I think everybody's getting more and more digital and you see that on a regular basis. My clients, the ones that are doing it digitally, seem to be doing very well.
And that makes total sense. And I can see that transition difficult. And obviously, and we talked about this a bit before, there's the generation before you selling to your generation or the next one down, and the next one down wanting to go mostly digital, mostly virtual, remote, especially in this time right now with a pandemic. And it's like, okay, that's just making it even more obvious. But then where is that balance with something, let's say like insurance or with some of your customers where there is still this relationship, there's still this contact, and where's that balance for something, like you said early on, what you sell for some people is a commodity, right? It's dollars for dollars the same. It's going to go to relationships. People go too heavy on the digital. Are they losing the relationship side trying to do it efficiently, let's say?
I don't know the answer to that. It's just all that's coming up so fast and so new. And, you know, and I'm still the guy that I'm old enough that I still lean towards the older generation way of doing things. If I need to go buy a car, I'm going to talk to somebody in my network and say, hey, where'd you buy your last car? Who sold you your last car? I'm going to, did you have a good experience? I still do it off a referral basis. But I think there's still a lot of that going on, you know, as far as people, if they need an electrician, they're going to say, hey, who did your electrical work or who did this? I think they go in their network and find it. I don't know if I'm answering your questions very well or not. It's just, it's hard for me to answer.
But I think that's great insight because as I'm listening to you talk, one of the things that's interesting, and I don't point this out a lot or enough, is going back to what we talked about where people just don't like salespeople, right? They don't want to deal with salespeople. And so asking for referral is a way to buffer against just walking onto that car lot and just hoping you get somebody good or calling a plumber out of the phone book and hoping if they say it's $200, it's really $200 and not $50 and they're just ripping you off. And so the referral mitigates that risk of dealing with somebody.
It does, right? One of the things that bugs me most is that people are going to Google or Yelp and trying to find star ratings and things like that is for referral business, which I get it, right? It's a nice tool to have. But most people that I know are not going to go leave a Google or a Yelp review if they have a positive experience. They're yeah. just not. Now, if they have a negative experience, they're going to get on there and they're going to blast everybody to kingdom come because they had a negative experience. But then the guy who comes and fixes that, they're not going to go reward him with a real 5-star review saying, this guy fixed all my problems. I mean, it happens, but just not as often as it ought to. So it's really a weird time that we're living in that regard.
And one thing I try to do in my own life, and this is a good tip for everybody listening, just something to think about, is I try to do to other people like I would want them to do to me as a business, and kind of golden rule-ish, where, like you said, most people are, I think it's like 20 or 25 times more likely to leave a negative review than a positive review, right? And so when somebody says, hey, can you give me a review? And it was a positive experience, I do my best to do that every single time, because I would want that same thing to happen to me. And I want to put that out there and hope that people do it. With my book that came out, I've been sending a lot to people, go to the post office. Some people are really great. They do a survey now where you do it. I fill it out every time because it's a positive experience. And I want to share that, not just people angry at the post office all the time. And hopefully more people out there will do that, put positive stuff out there if it is positive, and kind of offset the negative in the world and the negative voices.
Yeah, and I get that too. I have businesses ask me all the time after we use services, hey, would you leave me a review? And then I'm happy to, but it's almost because they asked me to. Unfortunately, and shame on me, I wouldn't think about it if they didn't ask, right? Yeah. But you're right, and that's something we should all probably get in the habit of reviewing people positively when they do things right.
Yeah, especially if it was really positive. I think that's always good and support that. So let's shift gears completely. What did you want to be when you grew up?
Gosh, I thought I wanted to be a football coach and a teacher. I was an athlete, and I thought that's what I wanted to be. And being a teacher, there's not too many professions more admirable than that. I just realized early that I don't have the patience to do it. But I've got friends that do, and my hat's off to them because I think they're doing a great job, especially with what's going on today with online learning, in-person learning, and all the different things. Yeah. I think they're really earning their money these days.
I think what's truly fascinating about that, and I can relate as well, is that you saw yourself becoming a teacher. And then when I asked you about persuasion, you didn't like the persuasion thought because you see yourself as more educating your clients and helping them make those decisions. And so it's the same thing, right? So you ended up teaching, you're just teaching business owners how to keep themselves safe and what they need to do and make smart decisions because you have so much experience in and around small businesses. I'm the same way. In a different life, I could have easily been a teacher. And essentially, I just do that from a sales perspective. But it's that same thing. So it's fascinating how that's now shown up as your sales style, if you will, is the educator.
Right. I didn't think about that, but it's a pretty good point.
There you go. And a coach, right? So you're also coaching either your team or your customers on how they can win in their business as well. So I'm sure you're doing a lot of that. What's the most non-sales job you've had in your life?
My grandfather owned a tent and awning business, and I used to hang awnings and put up tents in the summer. There was no sales about that. That was just go hang an awning, go put the tent up, you know, whatever it was. But it was a great way to spend summers.
There you go. Get outdoors. I love it. What is your personal definition of success?
Oh, that's difficult. And probably I should have been ready for that question, right?
No, that's the point. Just whatever comes to you.
I've had jobs where I've been successful and been miserable while doing the job, right?
Yeah.
And then I've had jobs where I've been successful and made money and been happy. And so I think there's a balance in there. I think you're successful if you're happy and your work-life balance is where you want it to be. That's where I think the definition of success is. And that differs for everybody, right? And I know people that aren't happy unless they're working 65 hours a week. And other people that aren't happy if they're working at all. It just depends on the individual and what's important to you. But I think if your work-life balance and your family balance is happy, then that makes you successful.
I love it. And last question, the journey or the destination?
It's always the journey, right? Because the destination is not in my control, right? I just need to take care of what's going on currently, and then whatever's going to happen will take care of itself. As long as I do the next right thing, whatever the next right thing needs to be, the destination will take care of itself. So it's always got to be the journey.
Fantastic. So before we end today, I wanted to share what we do at Cutter Consulting Group for people listening. So it started out based on the need that we saw with small businesses that were struggling to create scalable sales operations. hoping that if they hired the right salespeople, that it would be enough to win. Unfortunately, most teams are not generating a high level of sales, and that's where we come in. So we're driven to transform our clients' reps from order takers to quota breakers, advise our clients on the right tools that are available that help them run things better. To get more information, go to cutterconsultinggroup.com. And Michael, thank you for being on the podcast, putting up with my questions on the spot. I know that one of the best places for people to find you and the business is bradleyinsurancegroup.com. I also know that you said that you're starting to do more stuff on social media. Where can people find you, the content that your team is putting out?
Well, you mentioned Benita Samuel, so I'll give her a shout out. She's managing all of our content on LinkedIn, so you can certainly find us on LinkedIn. You mentioned our website, and anybody's happy to call us anytime, 303-480-5005. There's always somebody here Monday through Friday, 8 to 5.
Awesome. Michael, thanks again for being on the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Thanks, Jason. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode, and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.